The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday.
Live
in the Israel Update with Anthony Wright, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. How are you doing, Howard? How are you guys this morning?
Yes, excellent. Thank you. Getting straight into the topics, yesterday was International Holocaust Remembrance Day around the world. And, of course, that was with the exception of in Israel. So just explain to me how this works, because we don't – this is not Yom HaShoah. This is something a bit different, right?
This is something a bit different, and this is International Holocaust Remembrance Day that was actually enacted as a General Assembly resolution at the United Nations. And I think it goes back to 2008 that this day was actually initially represented around the world. And the date that was chosen being in January, it kind of changes because it always falls out on a Sunday, but towards the end of January, was a date that is supposed to commemorate the freeing of the Auschwitz death camp and the act that the international community did in order to ultimately get to Auschwitz and to liberate the camp from which was actually liberated initially by the Red Army.
Right.
So this is the date that was chosen in January to commemorate the liberation of Auschwitz. The date that Israel marks is Yom HaShoah, which is the date just after Pesach, has a completely different significance. And it's interesting that even though, you know, it is welcome that there is an international Holocaust Remembrance Day that is marked around the world, that the date that was chosen really talks about the actions of the international community rather than talks about the Jewish suffering or what exactly transpired during the period of the Shoah. And that is so noticeable when we look at the date that has been chosen as Yom HaShoah and what the significance of that date is, because that date serves to commemorate the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And, you know, I think therein lies the real difference between the two dates, because the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, as we will recall, was actions by the Jews to go up against the actions of the Nazis at that time in the Warsaw Ghetto. And so really the date that was chosen was really to try and show the resistance that took place during the period of the Shoah by Jews, rather than the famous narrative that Jews went to the death camps, to the gas chambers, like lambs to the slaughter. And there's been such an attempt to try to reverse that narrative and to explain and to show, demonstrate that Jews were very active in trying to do whatever they could in order to oppose the Nazi regime and to oppose what happened. And that was really something that was marked mostly, I would say, as part of the actions by Jews, as by the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And so really that was the date that has been chosen for Yom HaShoah, and certainly the date that Israel marks with sirens and other things that other activities that take place. And in fact, International Holocaust Remembrance Day yesterday is hardly a day in Israel. I mean, there are certain activities in official institutions, and certainly at Yad Vashem, there would have been activities yesterday. But as far as the average person in the street is concerned, it's not a day that people even notice. It's a regular working day. And it kind of goes past without any commemoration or any fanfare at all. So, you know, while we do very much welcome the fact that the international community has a day where the Holocaust is remembered and commemorated and people can focus their activities, it has just that little element of a little bit of lack of satisfaction and a lot of, you know, we just feel a little uncomfortable that the date that was chosen is all about the work and the actions by the international community, which unfortunately, as we all know, were very too little
Absolutely.
And way too late in the day.
So it's almost a way of placating or making the international community feel just a little bit better, even if it's on a subconscious level, because it's really about an act of liberation on their side rather than the loss of life, really, on for those who suffered.
I suppose that's the way that that one could certainly interpret it. And, you know, there are a lot of people who do interpret it like that. You know, once again, you know, there is this dilemma. On the one hand, we want to be grateful for the fact that the United Nations did decide to implement an international Holocaust Remembrance Day, which has only been the last 14 years. But on the other hand, it just has that little element of discomfort about it, you know, when you look at the date that was chosen.
Absolutely. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah has emerged from hiding to deliver a speech on Friday evening. So that's interesting, because certainly there was a lot of speculation as to how this guy was actually doing and if he was okay.
There has been a lot of speculation. In fact, I saw some articles that even suggested that he might have died. Not only that he was unwell, there was a lot of talk about the fact that he had had a serious heart attack and that he was being treated in a Lebanese hospital in Beirut. But it seems as if though he is alive and well, and certainly on a relatively good form when it comes to speech making. Because, you know, he was very quick to call upon Prime Minister Netanyahu and new chief of staff, who he didn't name, but of course referring to Aviv Kochavi, who's become the new chief of general staff. And he said, we call on the Prime Minister and the new chief of staff not to make mistakes in their assessments. They'll regret it, said Nasrallah, about, you know, the work that they, I don't know why he thinks that he wants them not to make mistakes. Because I think that they're just waiting for the first mistake to be made. He claimed that the tunnels that were recently discovered and were destroyed as part of the operation Northern Shield, he said they'd been there for a very long time and that Israel had known nothing about it. And he then went on to try to explain why he had kept silent during the period of Operation Northern Shield. And he claimed that he didn't want to help with the Israeli campaign, and he thought that, you know, he would stay silent and allow Gadi Eisenkot, who was then chief of general staff, and Netanyahu to take the credit that they wanted. But he did not really want to admit, even though he referred to these tunnels, he didn't really want to absolutely admit that Hezbollah had actually dug these tunnels. You know, it was just all interesting because, as we know, he hasn't made a speech for quite some time. And he came out saying the reason that he hasn't made a speech for quite some time is because he hasn't really had much to say. You know, when he has something to say, he will make a speech. And when he has nothing much to say, then he won't. But on this particular occasion, I'm not sure that he really did have a lot to say. I think it was really all about making a speech just to come out of hiding, just to show his face.
That he's alive and well, right?
Exactly, just to try and once again generate a little bit of support around the Hezbollah faithful people who would follow him, and just to get some sort of you know, a feeling that they've got a leader, and you know that they're being guided in a certain way. And so this was just an interesting, nothing to say kind of speech. Exactly the sort of thing that he claims he doesn't do. But he did, of course, threaten once again that, you know, Hezbollah could certainly fire rockets at Israel. He referred to a rocket that hit Ashkelon from Gaza, and he said, you saw what happened when one rocket from Gaza hit Ashkelon. Imagine if rockets started to fall on Tel Aviv. Of course, this is something that the Israeli military is certainly aware of. Their ability to fire missiles towards the central part of Israel, and of course has a rocket, has an anti-missile system in place in order to cope with that potential situation. So I don't think that we've learned anything new from any of what Nasrallah had to say, but
only
he certainly
he's
came
alive.
Out of hiding.
Right.
And you know, he's had a lot to say, as has been the case up until now. So nothing really too dramatic or new in any of that.
Anthony, before we carry on, I do want to wrap up the sports question, because otherwise I am going to neglect
to
do so and
don't.
Get into big trouble. In the game of snooker, how many balls are on the table at the start of the game? Unsigned says 16, green, brown, yellow, blue, pink, black, and 10 reds. Other answers, unsigned says 16. David Zimmerman says 22 balls. Unsigned, somebody else saying 6. The answer that I have from Louis Karpis is 22. So David Zimmerman being the one person there who got it right. At 7:55.
He seems to get all the sports questions right.
He does.
Right,
he does. Never gets it wrong. In fact, I don't think I can recall one time that he has got it wrong. So he's quite good at that. The Israeli cabinet has approved cannabis exports. That sounds like an interesting story.
Well, the whole thing about medical cannabis is generally an interesting story, because not too long ago, the use of medical cannabis was effectively made legal in Israel, and there's quite an extensive market now for the use of medical cannabis. It's now officially recognized as something which does provide pain relief, and you can get, medical cannabis in all different forms. It comes in drops and in tablets and in ointments. And of course, you can actually smoke it in the old fashioned way. And all of that apparently is very legal as long as you're suffering from pain and your doctor has prescribed you the ability to, take this cannabis for medical purposes. And as a result of that, there's quite a big medical a cannabis growing industry that's sprouted up in Israel, and some people are talking about just tax revenues of something like ₸1 billion a year, as Israeli companies are becoming some of the biggest producers of medical marijuana in the world. And now the cabinet has approved exports that will allow this medical marijuana to be exported to countries around the world. Once again, all legal. And, you know, this is a very sensitive area because for so many years, marijuana has been outlawed and indeed still is outlawed for recreational use. And of course, for those people who wish to create an industry out of selling it to others for recreational use. So one has to be very specific here that this is all about medical use for pain relief in particular. And it's sensitive because it's on the boundaries of what could be illegal. And so this very much blurs the edges as to what's okay, what's legal, and what could potentially be illegal. And so that's the reason that the Israeli government has come in and tried to lay down quite stringent rules to draw quite significant boundaries around what's okay and what's not okay. But this has become a very big thing in Israel. And we see it also becoming legalized around the world in many places. I know that many states in the United States have also legalized the use of marijuana for medical purposes. It's just becoming a trend, I think, around Europe as well. I'm not sure what the current state in South Africa is, but it seems as if though Israel is going to be one of the world's largest exporters of marijuana for use for medical purposes.
Right. So in South Africa, they've decriminalized it in terms of the constitutional law court, but it's very unclear really as to what it means. In other words, from what people understand, you can use it, you could have it for your own use in your own home, but it's unclear how you can acquire it. So South Africa is still a little bit confused in that regard. We've only got less than 2 minutes, but I do want to quickly touch on this. The first Tel Aviv Judo Grand Prix ended with Israeli judoka winning 7 medals. That's awesome.
This is really an awesome event in general and really took Tel Aviv by storm. The first time that a judo Grand Prix event has been held in Tel Aviv. And in fact, there were something like 400 participants who arrived in Israel from 54 countries who came along to the Shlomo Group Arena, which is just in the northern part of Tel Aviv. Men and women alike competing in what is the opening event of the 2019 World Tour. And the Israeli judoka did exceedingly well at their home event, the first time that such an event has been held in Israel, and were winners of these 7 medals, of which 4 were gold, 2 were silver, and 1 was bronze. And the heavyweight division was ultimately won by our 2006 Olympic bronze medalist from Rio, Or Sasson, who really brought the event to an amazing conclusion, one would say a dream conclusion, in terms of getting Israel this gold medal that he managed to win for the plus 100 kilo gold, the 100 kilo event. And so really it seems as if it's been an amazing success and really puts Israel further on the map of judo in general. We already know that, you know, Israeli judoka have done fairly well in international competitions, in the Olympic Games. A number of medals have been won by Israeli judoka over the years. But with this event now having taken place in Tel Aviv, it really puts Israel on the map as a major judo location and producing some amazingly high-quality people to compete.
Absolutely amazing. And that's where we leave it on that fantastic note. It is 8 o'clock. That was Anthony Reich with our Israel report.